Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program of news and stories from around the world is designed for people learning English. So we speak slowly using a simple style and limited vocabulary. Today, I have a report on a popular new movie in America, Crazy Rich Asians. Pete Musto and Alice Bryant bring you a science report. And we will close the show with our program, American Stories. Our story this week is The Cop and the Anthem by the writer O. Henry. The movie version of Kevin Kwan's popular novel, Crazy Rich Asians, received a warm welcome at American theaters Wednesday and Thursday. Theatergoers bought more than $8.5 million worth of tickets. It was a good start, especially since the film cost only about $30 million to make. Movie business experts are predicting it will recover that amount and more by the end of the weekend. Crazy Rich Asians received early critical praise as a young, fun, romantic comedy. New York rapper, actor, and funny woman Awkwafina also won much recent attention for her part in the movie. And the film has been discussed as a major breakthrough for Asian representation in the American movie industry. It is the first major Hollywood movie set in the present day to employ a majority Asian cast since The Joy Luck Club 25 years ago. The cast includes Asian American, Malaysian, and Chinese actors. Constance Wu stars in Crazy Rich Asians. She gained wide fame for her part on the American television show Fresh Off the Boat. In the movie, she plays Rachel Chu, a respected young economics professor in New York City. Rachel is in a happy romance with Nick Young, played by Henry Golding. The relationship is moving ahead beautifully until the time comes for Rachel to meet Nick's family in Singapore. On the plane, Rachel learns that the Young family is almost impossibly wealthy and powerful. And after arriving, Nick's mother, played by Michelle Yeoh, shows signs that suggest she might not find Rachel equal to her son's interest. John Chu directed the movie. He told the Associated Press that he thought a lot of Asian Americans have similar experiences when they travel to their ancestral homelands. I remember going to Asia for the first time, and there's a very specific emotion that you feel that's like, oh, this feels like home, but it's not my home, and these people don't see me as being part of this, he said. The movie shows Rachel as an outsider in Singapore. The funny and dramatic exploration of that experience may prove to be part of the film's appeal in America. Singapore itself also steals many of the scenes in Crazy Rich Asians. The movie has been described as part Cinderella story, part party movie. Singapore, with its wealthy citizens, extraordinary buildings, and beautiful gardens, is a perfect background for costly weddings, exciting parties, and other almost dreamlike social gatherings. The characters drive costly cars, travel in private aircraft, and wear the finest clothes. Critic Ingu Kang of the web magazine Slate describes the movie this way: emotionally layered, culturally specific, and frequently hilarious, Crazy Rich is a transportive delight. There is negative criticism of Crazy Rich Asians, too. Some say it is not representative of enough of Asia to justify the movie's name. Sangeetha Thanapal is a Singaporean-born activist. She brings attention to racial issues faced by the country's Indian, Malay, and other minority communities. She told the Associated Press that she does not plan to see the film. She said her race does not even seem to exist in the Singapore represented in Crazy Rich Asians. "Everyone is told you have to care, even though we are not represented. We can't see ourselves," she said. Those kinds of objections to Crazy Rich Asians have been hotly debated on social media. One Twitter user, Alton Wang, posted this argument: "The criticism of Crazy Rich Asians for not being Asian enough or not capturing the diversity of the Asian experience inherently implies at Crazy Rich Movie is our only chance to tell these stories. Don't believe that. Go watch this film to ensure other stories can also be told." The discussion is sure to continue.
Life has found a way to survive in some of the most extreme conditions in existence. Now, scientists believe they might have found a new habitat for microscopic organisms inside a mineral substance called garnet. Garnet is a gemstone that comes in many colors, but is most commonly a clear, deep red color. Recent research found strangely shaped markings inside garnet stones from Thailand. The researchers discovered that fatty acid had collected in the markings. This suggests that an extremely small organism, or microbe, dug the markings into the garnet. Magnus Ivarsson is the lead researcher on the study. He is with the University of Southern Denmark. He told VOA that the research started with a Thai exchange student named Bongkot Pichaikamjornwat, who was studying the qualities of several pieces of garnet. The student noticed the strange markings described as tunnels. These tunnels divided and changed directions. They were unlike the markings caused by environmental damage that she had observed before. So the student asked Ivarsson for help.
Ivarsson said, "When I first saw these structures, these tunnels, I was sort of intrigued by the complexity of them. He added that he had studied other microbial markings in minerals before, but never anything with such complexity. Garnet is an unexpected habitat for microbes because of how hard the stone is. In fact, Iverson suggests that garnet is the hardest mineral ever discovered to have markings created by microbes. Who knows what we'll find next? He added, maybe a diamond bored by microbes. Who knows? Researchers, however, note that no living organisms were discovered within the gemstones. Don Cardis is a geosciences researcher at the University of Rhode Island in the United States. She says the study did not find any genetic material, or DNA, of the organisms. But she says that is probably because the researchers would need to examine at least 1,000 garnet gemstones to collect any DNA.
The researchers depended on several technologies to make their findings. They used high-powered microscopes to make three-dimensional maps of the tunnels, which are narrower than a human hair. The scientists centered their attention on how the tunnels spread and changed directions, as well as the places where the tunnels came together. Environmental damage can cause breaks in hard materials. But Iverson says natural processes cannot explain the complexity of the tunnels his team observed. To demonstrate that microbes likely created the tunnels, the researchers had to examine the inside of the boreholes. Iverson told VOA, "The organic content tells us that there's been life living in there." In fact, the researchers identified organic substances common among bacteria and fungi. The garnets from the study came from the soil in a river near Chiang Mai, Thailand. Iverson and his team compared the biological material found in them to other minerals found in the same area, including quartz and hematite. None of the comparable stones showed signs of fatty acids. This suggests that the biological material was unique to the garnet tunnels. Iverson says that researchers at least know that biology was involved.
Iverson and his team also examined Thai garnets from river soil and from granite rock formations further down the river. He explains, "When we studied these garnets in the granite, we could see that there were no tunnels. But when we looked at the garnets further down the river, we could see that these tunnel structures had evolved. So something happened along the way in the river system." Shane McClure is the International Director of Colored Stones at the Gemological Institute of America. He says that such changes to the garnets can decrease the value of the stones. "One or two small tunnels," he says, "do not make a major difference in value." But he adds, "If there are many visible tunnels, the value of the gemstone may be greatly affected. The gemstones might not be usable for costly jewelry, but the stones do demonstrate that life finds a way in all sorts of unexpected places." Iverson said of the discovery, "When we look for life on Mars, we need to know what to look for. And this is definitely interesting in the search for life on Mars or any type of extreme environment." I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm Pete Musto.
Now it is time for American Stories. Our story today is from the writer O. Henry. Here is The Cop and the Anthem.
Soapy moved restlessly on his seat in Madison Square. There are certain signs to show that winter is coming. Birds begin to fly south. Women who want nice, new, warm coats become very kind to their husbands. And Soapy moves restlessly on his seat in the park. When you see these signs, you know that winter is near. A dead leaf fell at Soapy's feet. That was a special sign for him that winter was coming. It was time for all who lived in Madison Square to prepare. Soapy's mind now realized the fact. The time had come. He had to find some way to take care of himself during the cold weather, and therefore he moved restlessly on his seat. Soapy's hopes for the winter were not very high. He was not thinking of sailing away on a ship. He was not thinking of southern skies or the Bay of Naples. 3 months in the prison on Blackwell's Island was what he wanted. 3 months of food every day and a bed every night. 3 months safe from the cold north wind and safe from cops. This seemed to Soapy the most desirable thing in the world. For years, Blackwell's Island had been his winter home. Richer New Yorkers made their large plans to go to Florida or to the shore of the Mediterranean Sea each winter. Soapy made his small plans for going to the island. And now the time had come. 3 big newspapers, some under his coat and some over his legs, had not kept him warm during the night in the park, so Soapy was thinking of the island. There were places in the city where he could go and ask for food and a bed. These would be given to him. He could move from one building to another, and he would be taken care of through the winter. But he liked Blackwell's Island better. Soapy's spirit was proud. If he went to any of these places, there were certain things he had to do. In one way or another, he would have to pay for what they gave him. They would not ask him for money, but they would make him wash his whole body. They would make him answer questions. They would want to know everything about his life. No, prison was better than that. The prison had rules that he would have to follow, but in prison a gentleman's own life was still his own life. Soapy, having decided to go to the island, at once began to move toward his desire. There were many easy ways of doing this. The most pleasant way was to go and have a good dinner at some fine restaurant. Then he would say that he had no money to pay, and then a cop would be called. It would all be done very quietly. The cop would arrest him, he would be taken to a judge, the judge would do the rest. Soapy left his seat and walked out of Madison Square to the place where the great street called Broadway and Fifth Avenue meet. He went across this wide space and started north on Broadway. He stopped at a large and brightly lighted restaurant. This was where the best food and the best people and the best clothes appeared every evening. Soapy believed that above his legs, he looked all right. His face was clean, his coat was good enough. If he could get to a table, he believed that success would be his. The part of him that would be seen above the table would look all right. The waiter would bring him what he asked for. He began thinking of what he would like to eat. In his mind, he could see the whole dinner. The cost would not be too high. He did not want the restaurant people to feel any real anger. But the dinner would leave him filled and happy for the journey to his winter home. But as Soapy put his foot inside the restaurant door, The head waiter saw his broken old shoes and torn clothes that covered his legs. Strong and ready hands turned Soapy around and moved him quietly and quickly outside again. Soapy turned off Broadway. It seemed that this easy, this most desirable way to get to the island was not to be his. He must think of some other way of getting there. At a corner of 6th Avenue was a shop with a wide glass window bright with electric lights. Soapy picked up a big stone and threw it through the glass. People came running around the corner. A cop was the first among them. Soapy stood still and smiled when he saw the cop. "Where's the man that did that?" asked the cop. "Hey, don't you think that I might have done it?" said Soapy. He was friendly and happy. What he wanted was coming toward him. But the cop's mind would not consider Soapy. Men who break windows do not stop there to talk to cops. They run away as fast as they can. The cop saw a man further along the street running. He ran after him. And Soapy, sick at heart, walked slowly away. He had failed 2 times. Across the street was another restaurant. It was not so fine as the one on Broadway. The people who went there were not so rich. Its food was not so good. Into this, Soapy took his old shoes and his torn clothes, and no one stopped him. He sat down at a table and was soon eating a big dinner. When he had finished, he said that he and Money were strangers. "Yeah, get busy and call a cop," said Soapy. "And don't keep a gentleman waiting."
"No cop for you," said the waiter. He called another waiter. The two waiters threw Soapy upon his left ear on the hard street outside. He stood up slowly, one part at a time, and beat the dust from his clothes. Prison seemed only a happy dream. The island seemed very far away. A cop who was standing near laughed and walked away. Soapy traveled almost half a mile before he tried again. This time he felt very certain that he would be successful. A nice-looking young woman was standing before a shop window looking at the objects inside. Very near stood a large cop. Soapy's plan was to speak to the young woman. She seemed to be a very nice young lady who would not want a strange man to speak to her. She would ask the cop for help, and then Soapy would be happy to feel the cop's hand on his arm. He would be on his way to the island. He went near her. He could see that the cop was already watching him. The young woman moved away a few steps. Soapy followed. Standing beside her, he said, "Good evening, Bedelia. Don't you want to come and play with me?" The cop was still looking. The young woman had only to move her hand and Soapy would be on his way to the place where he wanted to go. He was already thinking how warm he would be. The young woman turned to him. Putting out her hand, she took his arm.
"Sure, Mike," she said joyfully. "If you'll buy me something to drink, I would have spoken to you sooner, but the cop was watching."
With the young woman holding his arm, Soapy walked past the cop. He was filled with sadness. He was still free. Was he going to remain free forever? At the next corner, he pulled his arm away and ran. When he stopped, he was near several theaters. In this part of the city, streets are brighter, and hearts are more joyful than in other parts. Women and men in rich, warm coats moved happily in the winter air. A sudden fear caught Soapy. No cop was going to arrest him. Then he came to another cop standing in front of a big theater. He thought of something else to try. He began to shout as if he had had too much to drink. His voice was as loud as he could make it. He danced and cried out. And the cop turned his back to Soapy and said to a man standing near him,
"It's one of those college boys. You won't be hurting anything. We had orders to let them shout."
Soapy was quiet. Was no cop going to touch him?
He began to think of the island as if it were as far away as heaven. He pulled his thin coat around him. The wind was very cold. Then he saw a man in the shop buying a newspaper. The man's umbrella stood beside the door. Soapy stepped inside the shop, took the umbrella, and walked slowly away. The man followed him quickly.
"My umbrella," he said. "Oh, is it?" said Soapy. "Why don't you call a cop? I took it. Your umbrella. Why don't you call a cop? There's one standing at the corner."
The man walked more slowly. Soapy did the same, but he had a feeling that he was going to fail again. The cop looked at the two men.
"I," said the umbrella man, "that is, you know how these things happen. If that's your umbrella, I'm very sorry. I found it this morning in a restaurant. If you say it's yours, I hope you'll..."
"It's mine," cried Soapy with anger in his voice. The umbrella man hurried away. The cop helped a lady across the street. Soapy walked east. He threw the umbrella as far as he could throw it. He talked to himself about cops and what he thought of them. Because he wished to be arrested, they seemed to believe he was like a king who could do no wrong. At last, Soapy came to one of the quiet streets on the east side of the city. He turned here and began to walk south towards Madison Square. He was going home, although home was only a seat in the park. But on a very quiet corner, Soapy stopped. There was an old, old church. Through one of the colored glass windows came a soft light. Sweet music came to Soapy's ears and seemed to hold him there. The moon was above, peaceful and bright. There were few people passing. He could hear birds high above him. And the anthem that came from the church held Soapy there, for he had known it well long ago. In those days his life contained such things as mothers and flowers and high hopes and friends and clean thoughts and clean clothes. Soapy's mind was ready for something like this. He had come to the old church at the right time. There was a sudden and wonderful change in his soul. He saw with sick fear how he had fallen. He saw his worthless days, his wrong desires, his dead hopes, his lost power of his mind. And also in a moment, his heart answered this change in his soul. He would fight to change his life. He would pull himself up out of the mud. He would make a man of himself again. There was time. He was young enough. He would find his old purpose in life and follow it. That sweet music had changed him. Tomorrow he would find work. A man had once offered him a job. He would find that man tomorrow. He would be somebody in the world. He would... Soapy felt a hand on his arm. He looked quickly around into the broad face of a cop.
"What are you doing hanging around here?" asked the cop.
"Nothing," said Soapy.
"You think I believe that?" said the cop.
Full of his new strength, Soapy began to argue. And it is not wise to argue with a New York cop.
"Come along," said the cop.
3 months on the island," said the judge to Soapy the next morning.
And that is our show for today. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Hope you can join us again. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.